Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free, year-round fundraising program for schools. You can learn more at schoolspiritvending.com.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
In today's show, I talk with John Harper, the host of the podcast, My Bad, and we discuss things like his have fun style of leadership, the power of apologies, and John's morning routine for success. Thank you so much for listening. I'd never take it for granted and enjoy the show. Hey, Better Leaders, I'm here with another podcast host, John Harper, and he's currently the assistant principal at Sandy Hill Elementary School in Cambridge, Maryland. This is his sixth year serving as an AP at the elementary level. Prior to becoming an administrator, he served as a math coach and as an elementary school teacher. During his 10 years as a classroom teacher, he taught first, second, fourth, and fifth grades. During his six-year teaching, he earned National Board Certification, which he held for 10 years. For 7 years, he ran a young gentleman's club that was aimed at helping young men reach their full potential. John received a BA from Furman University while majoring in philosophy. He later went on to earn his BS from Salisbury University while majoring in elementary education. John was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to student teach in New Zealand. We got to hear about that on the show. And he eventually received his MA degree from Salisbury University in public school administration. John's the host of the hot podcast, My Bad, linked up in the show notes. And John lives in Cambridge, Maryland with his amazing wife and two awesome children. John, thanks for joining me on the show.
Thanks so much, man. That was the best intro I've ever had. I appreciate that so much. Thank you, Daniel.
I was practicing, John, for hours before the recording, so we're good there.
You did it right, man.
John, what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
You know, Daniel, I got very lucky. I am not one of those stories where I knew that I wanted to be a teacher from day one. I really had no idea what I wanted to do. And, you know, like you said in the bio, I majored in philosophy. And that was because my freshman year, there was a professor that just seemed super cool. And I thought, you know what? Let me major in philosophy. And that really, when you graduate with a degree in philosophy, you can't do a whole lot. And I got out and my dad was a doctor. And I thought, you know what, maybe I want to be a doctor, which wasn't really enough motivation for that. But I decided I took med courses for about 2 years. I applied to medical school. And while I was waiting to hear, my mom said, you know, you can't just hang around the house all day. You got to get a job. You got to do something. And she said, why don't you put in your name to substitute down the street at the local elementary school? And I thought, oh, this is crazy. Mom, there's no way I'm going to do this. And, you know, back then I was young and stupid. Now I'm just old and stupid. But I thought, you know, mom, that's just a job that, you know, mostly women do. And why on earth would I want to be an elementary school teacher? I ended up subbing there for 6 to 8 months, almost every day. And I got waitlisted at medical school. And when I didn't get in, I'll be honest, I wasn't disappointed at all because I absolutely loved it. Learned how stupid I was to think that I didn't think of that as a possibility. Went back and got a degree because at that point, there weren't any MAT programs. There wasn't any quick way to do it. And so I basically had to go back and get a whole second bachelor's. And I got that in elementary ed and just start teaching from there. So I was very lucky. I was very lucky to fall into this.
I love it. And John, how would you describe your leadership style now you've been AP for a while and teacher for a while? And how'd you develop this style?
You know, I've been thinking about this question, and, you know, my go-to answer is to say servant leadership, because I feel like that is my goal, that is my aim. But I'm going to put a little spin on it. I'm going to make a style up, if you don't mind. My style, I like that. I'm going to call it the have fun style. And there is no name for that, and if people want to look that up, they won't ever find it. But I try to add as much fun to the day, to teachers, to kids as I can, because school can be very stressful. Life can be very stressful. And I find, you know, oftentimes when you're around kids, when you're around adults, I mean, school is fun, but there's also a lot of stress. And I do everything I can to make teachers laugh, to make kids laugh. I'll sing in the hallway. I'll dance, even though I can't do either one very well. And I feel like in that sense, you know, I'm serving the teachers and I'm serving the kids. But I mean, ultimately, I do see myself as a servant leader in the sense that I've learned that, you know, the more you try to help other people, the better off the whole organization is, the better off you are. And I mean, you feel better. You feel better. I mean, you can go around thinking, you know what, let me see what I can do to make this better or make that better. But in the end, that can be quite difficult. You can try to find a certain style and you might not be able to latch onto it. But if you go into a teacher's classroom and think, okay, what can I do to help that teacher teach? What can I do to help that kid have a better day? That in the end is the most rewarding for me more than anything else.
What's one of the last songs you sang then, having fun in the hallways?
Let me see. One of the last songs. That's a good one. You know, the funny thing is, and this person might not even listen to this, but I work with an instructional assistant named Sean Jackson, and she teases me because I know about 5 lyrics to every single song ever made, I think. But she always says, John, when are you going to learn to sing a full song? And the funny thing is, I'll start singing songs in the hallway, and then I'll realize the second half of the song is probably not appropriate, so I got to watch myself. But, you know, I'm trying to think. I'm trying to get people to catch on to some of the songs from Hamilton, because my family right now in the Harper household, the soundtrack to the musical Hamilton has been on 24/7. And I don't know if you've heard any of it. Have you heard any of the soundtrack to Hamilton?
Just some stuff, you know, I've gotten on YouTube or like Spotify, you know, or Apple Music. I've listened that way.
Absolutely. I know what you're saying. And I wouldn't have, but my wife and daughter started listening to it. And I'm going to tell you, Daniel, it is one of the most brilliant works of art I have ever heard in my life. I mean, there's rap, there's R&B, there's soul, there's rock, and it is just... There's history lessons. I mean, we listened to it the other day driving home from Williamsburg. We're heading back from Busch Gardens, and I learned more about history, I think, in listening to the 3-hour soundtrack than I did in probably 5 or 6 college courses. I mean, it's absolutely brilliant. And Lin-Manuel Miranda put together something that's absolutely incredible. So if you haven't heard it, I recommend getting it and just sit down and listen to it. It's one of the most amazing works I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, everybody I know loves it. And here in Houston, you know, I'm going to catch it at the Hobby Center. But it's one of those shows that's so popular, you got to have season passes to even be able to buy a single ticket, at least the first round.
Oh, I mean, that's the thing. My wife keeps putting in to get for the raffle to maybe get tickets. But I think it's almost impossible. The good thing is a lot of the songs and some of the videos are on YouTube. But the soundtrack itself is just absolutely brilliant. So those are some of the songs that I'm singing in the hallway or just, you know, anything that comes to mind. The funny thing is, like I said, though, that I can never remember the full lyrics to any song. But, you know, I try to add as much fun to the day as I can because I work with the populations of students that a lot of them have very difficult lives outside of school. That doesn't mean that they're with people that don't love them. I don't mean that at all. I just mean that they're in tough situations and they come to school stressed and they come to school with a lot of anxiety, maybe not having slept, maybe angry at, you know, the hand they were dealt in life. And I figure if I can make them laugh by being foolish, if I can make them laugh by being silly, but at the same time, in other words, not crossing the line and, you know, being serious when I have to, then, you know, then I've done my job.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, life is hard enough. So I think, you know, I definitely appreciate from a leadership and just a human level that you try to infuse a little bit of fun into every day.
Absolutely. I mean, we take ourselves too seriously. I know there's times that I do and there's times that I have. And it's just like, you know, when you look at it, I always say, you know, school is what we do. It's not who we are. And we oftentimes forget that. It's easy to forget, you know, when I'm writing a blog post or you look on Twitter, you see this or you see that and you think, wow, I need to get better at this or I need to get better in that. And I'm like, settle down, John. You know, you're doing the best you can from during the day. You're coming home to your family and, you know, life is good.
So this is sort of a mess up, fess up, my bad type question. But what's been your worst leadership mistake, John, and what'd you learn from it?
I think my worst mistake is one... It's one that I've done several times, but I can give you a specific example. And it's losing my temper with students. And... You know, I've talked about that a couple times on the show, and I've done that. I probably did it today. And you know, like me, it's easy. You love these kids so much that you're so passionate about what you do. And when you see different things happen or you see things take place, it infuriates you. And we're human, just like they are. But I had an instance a couple years ago where I got called outside to deal with a situation in which a student was misbehaving. And I was just full of steam. And I walked out there, and I asked the student to come over to me. The student basically ignored me and walked away. And I screamed probably so loud they heard it for miles. I was just so livid at that moment. And I lost my cool. And, you know, that's something that I take pride in, is trying to model. I think if one thing we can do as leaders, we need to model. And, you know, I lost it. And I lost it in front of probably like 3 fifth grade classes. And I went inside. The girl finally came with me, came inside. And I apologized to her, and when I called her mom, I talked to her about what I had to deal with in the first hand. But then I apologized to her and told her, you know, I did lose my temper with your child, and I shouldn't have. But it's one that I still make from time to time, and I hate it when I make it because it's embarrassing. But I think the biggest thing that I've learned is the apology. In other words, you need to apologize when you make these mistakes. So the next day I went out, and with this student there, I apologized to her in front of all the fifth grade. And I didn't say, you know what, I'm sorry I got mad, but you did this. I just said, I'm sorry, I was wrong, I shouldn't have done that. And then I left. And I think it's easy in our profession to get mad, but then it's also, some of these kids, it's tough because they're yelled at enough and they hear that enough. The last thing they need is for me to yell. And also, it bothers me when I lose control of my temper. And I'm not trying to imply that I'm some hothead all the time. I think the fact that I don't lose my temper that often, when I do, it bothers me. And so what I've learned, the biggest thing is just to try to repair, but you've got to mean it. And I think I'm seeing that more and more nowadays, that teachers and adults are learning that, you know what, it's okay to apologize to a kid. I mean, back in the day, you would never hear such things. Adults would rarely apologize to kids, nor would teachers. But, you know, you're with these kids all day long. You're basically, you know, we talk about it at my school. We have families. We have, your classroom is a family. And so that's part of your family. And so, you know, when you hurt someone in your family, it's important that you repair and you rebuild that relationship. So that's probably, I mean, that's in general, I guess I gave a specific example, but it's also in general that, you know, I keep doing that from time to time, but I always make sure that I apologize and I say, you know what, I'm sorry. I had no right to do that and I was wrong. And, you know, once in a while, I'll also apologize to the parents, and I've had parents say, well, no, you know, he has a way of doing that. He can make you mad. And I say, no, look, I'm the professional. I had no business talking to your child that way. I shouldn't have, and I'm sorry. So that's something that I'm constantly working on. And, you know, I work with amazing people that, you know, keep me in check.
That's good. You know, and it takes a big leader, a big guy, to be able to fess up to their own mistakes and apologize. And, you know, I can't emphasize that enough. Today, even I apologized to a few folks. I felt like I was wasting their time in terms of hiring and wanting to bring the right person in. We haven't found them yet. There's some really good people there, right? But it wasn't going to be the right fit. Mm-hmm. And it was getting frustrating because we've been through a number of rounds. You know, I don't want to waste people's time. I mean, that's part of the process, right?
Right, right.
But just trying to figure out, like, how do we make the system more efficient and bring in the highest quality so that we can really maximize that potential. And I just felt like, listen, this is something I need to apologize for, maybe because I'm a newer principal or whatever. But I said, listen, I'm sorry. I feel like I've been wasting your time. We'll bring even higher quality candidates in next.
No, and I mean, I think that's the right thing to do. And it's not always, you know, we don't come from a bad place when we make these mistakes. We always come from a good place. But I think when people hear that apology and we're sincere about it, it means the world. It means the world to kids. I mean, I had my very first interview for very first episode. I had Todd Whitaker come on, and he talked about a time where he lost his temper and got angry. He was a basketball coach, and he hollered at the referee and got a technical. And that blew me away. I'm like, oh my gosh, Todd's telling me this. And I've been thinking about, you know, I always go by Todd Whitaker's, you know, 29 times out of 30. I don't know if you know, but he talks about, you know, you can treat people well 29 times out of 30, but they never forget that one time out of 30, you know, that you treat them poorly. They always remember. That's something I've kept in my brain forever. And I try to, you know, go by that. And, you know, when he came on the show and shared that, it was so powerful, you know, how even he makes mistakes, and we all do. But he said, you know what, he made a point to repair it, to apologize, and to move on. And so it's, you know, I think the more we can apologize, the more it gives the people around us permission to apologize and to feel like they don't have to be so perfect.
Yeah, it's a real good point. And I know I've read just in regular relationships, I think it's like a 1-3 ratio. You got to have 3 positive interactions for every one that you mess up. And then the stakes are even higher within the context of a marriage. I think it's more like 5-1. So you hit it in the head with the 29 out of 30. Hey, John, tell me the story of starting My Bad, the podcast.
Well, My Bad, I got lucky. I really enjoy. I started blogging for BAM Radio, and then I had this idea about mistakes. And it comes from a story in which, I'll tell you the story. My daughter was playing soccer a couple years ago, and she was the only girl on this organized soccer league. And it was her first year playing. And I used to love going to watch her play. Her coach was incredible. I mean, just the kindest man. He would, you know, give everybody equal playing time. He would nurture her. I couldn't have asked for a better experience for her. And, you know, it's in the fall. It's a beautiful time of the year. Leaves are changing colors. And I would go just sit there and watch her while she's practicing. Sometimes I'd go by Panera first. I'd have a bowl of soup out there where I'm eating that, eat a sandwich, and just watch her kicking the ball around. I mean, it was nice. Sometimes my little five-year-old would be there. So it was a nice time. But I never forget watching her one time have this practice. And at the end of practice, her team is scrimmaging each other. And I'm watching. And I see all of a sudden my daughter score a goal for the other team. And I think this is when she's 11 now. This is when she was 10, 9 or 10. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is one of these moments that's going to make or break her. This is going to be heartbreaking for her. Because, you know, scoring a goal for the other team, she's the only girl out there. She hasn't really played a whole lot of organized sports before. And so she starts walking towards me, and I think, what am I going to say? How is she going to be? Is she going to bust into tears? And she looks at me, and she says, Daddy, you know what? I'm just like you. And I thought, what is she talking about? And then it hit me that I had shared with her how when I was in high school, I scored a goal for the other team in sudden death overtime to cause us to lose an entire game. And I thought that was so powerful. The fact that just the simple act of me sharing my mistake with her allowed her to feel like, you know what, it's okay that I made a mistake. It wasn't that big a deal. And I thought, there it is. I mean, I think that coupled with the fact that social media, we see everybody's best side. We see everybody's, you know, highlight reel. And, you know, why not start sharing some mistakes? But I mean, I think that event right there turned me because, you know, I know that most of the listeners, if not probably all the listeners to My Bad, are adults. But what I hope is that it trickles down to kids and that we have classrooms and we have families and we have environments in which kids can forgive themselves for making mistakes. Because, you know, kids are just, they're so damn hard on themselves. And it's heartbreaking to see a kid make a mistake and just beat themselves up over it. And I thought, you know what? If we start sharing more of our mistakes, kids are going to realize, you know, mistakes aren't that big a deal. We all make them. We make tons every day. I mean, every single guest I've had on, one of their first lines is, you know, John, I've made tons of mistakes. Where do you want me to begin? And yet, you know, you see kids at any age level from elementary to high school that just beat themselves up over mistakes that they make. And I'm thinking, we got to change this. We got to change the mindset to where mistakes are so horrible. And so, I mean, that one evening where, you know, my daughter walked over to me and said she was just like me, I think that changed everything for me.
That's an awesome story. And I appreciate, you know, sharing it. It just keeps reiterating that theme of that it's okay. You don't have to be perfect. And also, too, how to wrestle with the uncomfortableness and the tension there of making mistakes and how do you rebound from it. But life is about, and it's about bouncing back and then always trying to get better or learning from those mistakes.
No, absolutely. I mean, I share mistakes with kids all the time. Students that I meet with, I share mistakes with teachers when I meet with them. I mean, I don't expect anybody to be perfect. You know, obviously, if a teacher makes a mistake that I need to talk to them about, I talk to them about it. But I don't, you know, I don't judge them as a person because they've made a mistake. I mean, it happens. And I'm really upfront with kids. I mean, you know, it is. You'll get kids sent to you for cursing or for doing this or for doing that. And I say, look, I understand. I've done that too. You know, sometimes when I lose my temper, I might say something bad and I shouldn't, and it's wrong. And, you know, I've lost my temper and I've done this. And sometimes, you know, when they hear that you've done it, they realize, you know what, he's not going to come down with the hammer on me. He's here to build a relationship, and he's here because he knows what it's like. And he's been a kid too. But, you know, oftentimes kids forget that we were once kids. You know, they see you in Walmart or they see you out and they think, wait a minute, you have a life outside of school. And it's just, it's important for us to convey that message, I think.
Hey, John, do you have any morning or evening routines that help you be successful?
You know, I'm working on that. I'm working on that right now. It's interesting you said that because, and I've talked about this before, I have had, and I still do sometimes, battle anxiety. And, you know, here's another time where I'm upfront with kids and with teachers. I do take medication for anxiety. And there are some mornings where I wake up and I'm feeling a little bit anxious. I'm feeling a little bit stressed. And sometimes I don't really have a good reason. And I just recently read a really good article. I hope I don't say the guy's name wrong, by Benjamin Foley, I think his name is, who battles stress himself. And I was just reading it this morning because it's interesting you asked this question. And I'm trying to use some of his routines. And, you know, I started this morning, but I've done some of these things before. One of them is trying to just write out what's on my mind, to journal and not worry about, you know, write it freehand, not worry about punctuation, capitalization. It can be on a scrap piece of paper, but just write what's on your mind. I also try to, you know, read a little bit in the morning sometimes when it's quiet because I have a 5 and 11-year-old. And, you know, I try to do a little bit of reading in the morning, a little bit of writing. I find that that's a good time to do what's called deep work. I don't know if you've heard or read the book by Cal Newport called Deep Work.
Oh, it sounds cool.
It's a really good book that I've read recently. And it just basically talks about how important it is to give yourself and find time where you can completely focus on what you're doing, because as you know, it's very difficult to even find sometimes 30 minutes just to focus. And you know, nowadays our attention is so divided that it's rare that we just give 30 clean, I don't know if clean's the right word, but 30 clean minutes to writing or 30 clean minutes to reading, because we're looking at our phone or we're checking the TV or we're, you know, we have kids. And obviously when we have kids and they're awake, we need to give them our attention. But I try to give myself time in the morning. I try to get up before my kids. And, you know, I always have breakfast. When I hear about people that don't eat breakfast in the morning, I think, how in the world is that possible? But, you know, those different things like that. And this morning, you know, I tried to think about three things that I was grateful for. And these are all in that article that I read. I just read it this morning. And I'm sorry, I just read it last week. But I started trying some of these things today. And I feel like it helped. It got me off to a better start. And one of them, I got to tell you, I didn't try it this morning. But this guy talks about it. And he says there's science to back it up. But he says to take a cold shower. And I tried this once, Daniel, a couple weeks ago, and it almost killed me. They say start with your shower and then gradually turn it down to where it's almost freezing water. And I tried it. And I'm sure if my wife or kids heard me, I sounded like a lunatic because I was almost crying in there. It was like freezing cold water. And they say what it does is because it physically stresses your body so much that your body releases, I don't know, hormones or chemicals as if you're really in a stressful situation, and it helps you battle that to help you counter some stress that you might be feeling in the morning. And I'm going to tell you, I've only done that twice because it's a little tough to take a cold shower in the morning.
Yeah, that is rough. I've tried that a couple of times and switched it, gone from hot. So an easier approach than doing just cold, you know, right up front is take your warm shower and then at the end, 10 seconds, 30 seconds, whatever you can handle, blast yourself with that cold water too.
So you've read about this too. Okay, I want to make sure I wouldn't. I mean, I know I'm crazy, but I wanted to make sure I'm not the only one trying this. And has it worked for you? I mean, have you tried it much? Or
I've tried it enough to know that that's not one of the things I've been sticking with.
I don't think I am either. I don't know.
But it's fun, you know, and sometimes if I need an extra shock to wake up a little bit more, it's definitely very, very effective. The reason I ask that question is right now with some of my coaching clients, we're reading The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod. Have you ever read that by any chance?
I haven't, no, but I'm always interested. I like reading different morning routines. Like I like Tim Ferriss. I read some Tim Ferriss and look at some of his stuff and listen to some of his podcasts. I'm always interested to hear what different people do in the morning. So what's something that he talks about? What's something you'd recommend from him?
Yeah, and Tim endorses the book, and not that it matters that I endorse it because we're on two different levels. But like I said, I'm reading it in my mastermind. And so Miracle Morning is an acronym called SAVERS. And so just very briefly, very quickly, you want to try to wake up earlier than you normally do. And he suggests an hour, and then work through the acronym. S is for silence. And so that could be prayer. So I pray, I'll read the Bible a little bit, and people know that I meditate. So I do a combination of those, and I see them all as a little bit different for why I do them. The A is affirmations. So if you've ever read Over the Top by Zig Ziglar, he's huge, huge into affirmations. So I used to read his, but then I wanted to own my own more. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote my own. So silence, affirmations. V is visualization. So just kind of, you know, you hear about pro athletes that really think about the game and how they perform. This is just you walking through your day and how you're going to, you know, crush it when you start dancing in the halls at your school, John.
Indeed, I tear it up.
So that's what you do during that visualization. E is for exercise. R is for reading and just self-development. And the last S, Hal Elrod, the author, admits to cramming in an S. It's really for journaling, but he calls it scribing so that he could use acronym SAVERS.
Okay, so I hit on a couple of those. All right. I like that. That's good stuff. I mean, I know I need to start meditating more, and I've got the app Headspace on my phone, and I've tried that, and I do like that. I just need to work, you know, I think you just said six or seven things of those. I need to try to get to where I'm doing at least four or five of them.
Yeah, and it's a slow process, and you'll find if you read the book, and listeners, if you pick that up, check it out. You have flexibility there. It's if you could get it all in the morning, great. But sometimes, like today before this interview, I told John, you know, I did my exercise. I ran a few miles before recording the show. So it's like whatever works for you and your schedule. But this is just what Hal found helped him move through some stuff that you're talking about, anxiety, and also helped him get greater focus and accomplish the goals that he had set for himself.
I like that. I'll have to check that out. Okay, thank you.
Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free, year-round fundraising program for schools. And believe it or not, their CEO and founder, Matt Miller, was a guest on Episode 5 of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. He can increase your school spirit with custom stickers for your school and raise funds at the same time. There's no upfront costs, no volunteers, no selling. It's absolutely free to you, the school. If you're sick of the same old ways of raising money, check out School Spirit Vending at schoolspiritvending.com. John, what's a class we should add to our schools that's not currently taught that you know of?
You just touched on it, actually. I think meditation, and it doesn't need, because I know obviously we have to be careful. It doesn't have to take on any religious aspect. For some kids, it might. But I think just meditation or silence, in other words. I think we have the hardest time, and I say we, because I think it's a lot of us, have the hardest time just, you know, learning to be still. I mean, that was an Eagles song a couple of years ago. I always think about that. But we have the hardest time learning to be still, and I do. And, you know, one time I think of it, and I've almost written a blog piece about it, and I haven't yet, but I probably will one day, is I have a hard time just keeping still. At my school, we play the Star Spangled Banner, and we do the Pledge of Allegiance. And it is literally for the probably 3 or 4 minutes that that's on, hard for me just to keep still. And that's embarrassing. So, I mean, I try, you know, I stand still. I try to think about what the flag represents, those people that are serving. I try to keep my body and my mind still and peaceful. But I think our kids nowadays, they're so, and not just kids, all of us, we're so hooked on dopamine. And I'm guilty of it. You know, when you hear your phone ding, you get that, and you look down, you get that quick rush, or you go on Twitter and you get that quick hit of dopamine, you know, the drug that's naturally released. And I think our kids are so addicted to that because they play so many video games, they're on their cell phones. And I think that's one thing that would help them deal with that better, just having 15 minutes of silence. I think it would also calm their bodies down. I think a lot of our kids, we can't even begin to imagine what they deal with or what they encounter before they even walk through our doors. I mean, some kids, first of all, the bus ride alone for some kids, it's loud, it's noisy, it can be crowded. Some kids are living in a house where it's crowded. They might not get a lot of sleep. It might be stressful. It might be loud. And, you know, just to have that time in the morning, I think, or any time, but, you know, if you could do it in the morning to where they just learn to calm their body and calm their mind, I think it would set their day up for success. And then eventually, if they had that class, then they could learn to do that on their own. They wouldn't just need to be at school to do that. But all of a sudden, if they feel like something's going on, you know, you can take your place, take your mind and body to a place that can relax you. You know, I mean, one of my favorite quotes, and I'm going to paraphrase it, is, you know, peace does not mean to be in a place where there's no noise and no disruptions. It means to be in the midst of all those things and still be calm and quiet in your soul. And I love that quote. I used to have that I have the magnet up. I'm trying to think of where it is. It's either at my house or at school. But I truly think that, you know, we can be in the midst of chaos, but if we can really train our mind and our body to calm down, that's so important. And I think that'd be such an important class to have for children.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, John. And two quick things. You know, that's something that in an ideal week, I love pausing and doing that every day. No more than, you know, you don't need no more than 10 minutes. I use Headspace too, so you could do 10, 15, 20. I do 10. And that's an ideal day, not every day. But the point is this, and you have Calm, I have Headspace. I like Headspace because I feel like it teaches me more. But the illustration, like literally the cartoon that they show you, is imagining your mind as a calm, like, lake, okay? And then the rain starts to pour. And today in Houston, it was pouring. I've seen flooding. I saw an SUV just stuck in high water. I've never seen that before up in Chicago. So you imagine that type of storm. The water gets turbulent. Waves, you know, are crashing, all that kind of stuff. But the point of meditation, focus on that breathing. For me, it's not a religious thing at all. It's just a breath thing. And being able to calm those storms so that it's back to very still waters where it's crystal clear. You can see all the way through the bottom and you have what you were talking about, that type of peace.
I like that image, and I'm with you. I think the Headspace, the images and the graphics they have on there are really cool. And plus the guy's voice just sounds cool. He's got that cool British accent, so I love that. He just sounds BA to me.
Yeah, right. My girl's from Zimbabwe, so she has a British accent, and it is absolutely adorable. And for the listeners, too, I'm going to link up an article I found while we were chatting about one school that replaced detention with meditation and some of the results they've seen. So listeners,
that'd be great.
Yeah, want you guys to check that out for sure. John, how do you want to be remembered as a leader?
I want people to know that, you know, I wrote a piece one time, not to reference one of my pieces, but I wrote a piece one time called Anything, Anytime, People. And, you know, I based that phrase on a buddy of mine named Rob Cooper. He's a principal down in Florida. And, you know, he and I started teaching up in Cambridge, Maryland together. And he was the kind of person that I could ask anything of, one of my best friends. And he always said, you know what, Harp, anything, anytime. And, you know, there's people like that that we have in our lives. And you know those people in your life. I know those people in mine that you could ask them and they're going to be able to help. They'll help you. They'll drop everything that they're doing to help you. And, you know, as a leader, I want to be one of those people that people see, you know, if they come to me, I'm there for them. I'm always going to help them no matter what it is. You know, I mean, I'm not going to enable people, but I'm also, they can come to me with anything and I'm there for them at all times, you know, because that makes a school run. You know, it's awesome to have incredible teachers that have perfect pedagogy or might have perfect classroom management, but you have to have those anything, anytime people, the kind of people that, you know what, somebody's running late, can you cover their class? Somebody isn't going to be able to make it. I might need you to have two classes today. I need you to do this for me. I need you to do that for me. And they don't ever hesitate. You know, those are the kind of people that I absolutely love working with, and I'm lucky that I get to work with very many people like that. And I want people to remember me as someone like that, that if they came to me, I was able to help them no matter what.
And I found that article. Thank you, Google. And we'll link that up into the show notes for listeners as well. Anything, anytime, people. What's one book every principal should read right now and why?
Ryan Holiday's The Obstacle is the Way. I absolutely love his stuff. I'll be honest, I hadn't heard of Ryan Holiday, and I must have been living under a rock, I guess, but I hadn't heard of him until probably about 8 months ago. And a buddy of mine named Sean Thumb told me about him, and he wrote Ego is the Enemy and Obstacle is the Way. And The Obstacle is the Way is an absolutely amazing book. First of all, Ryan Holiday is brilliant. He's a voracious reader. And basically, the chapters are probably 6 to 10 pages. They're bite-sized chapters. But what he does is he takes figures throughout history and figures, you know, people nowadays, and talks about how if these folks hadn't gone through this trial or this tribulation, they wouldn't be the person that they were today. And oftentimes, when we're in the midst of a struggle, we're in the midst of a problem, we think, oh my gosh, this is horrible. I'm never going to make it. But you know, like me, once you come out of it on the other end, a lot of times you're much better for it. You just don't realize it when you're in it. What Ryan Holiday does is he's put that into a book, and he's given probably 15 to 20 different figures and talked about that. And it's, I'm telling you what, you finish reading that book and you feel 10 times smarter, and you know, you feel better about the mistakes. I wouldn't say mistakes, but you feel better about the struggles that you're going through, and you realize that the problem that you're working on that week, or the problem that's been bugging you, you know, maybe it's trying to tell me something. Maybe it's going to lead me to my solution. Maybe it's going to lead me to where I'm going to be in the future. Maybe it's going to lead me to my next step, and we just don't know it yet. So it's an amazing book. I would highly recommend it.
You have no idea how badly I need to hear that right now, so I'm going to be ordering that right away.
Yeah, it's amazing. And his website is awesome. He blogs also, and his blogs is just, they're really good. They're really easy to read. And like I'm telling, I mean, his footnotes are incredible. Now, I haven't gone back to look at them all, but he has a lot of footnotes. I mean, the man has probably read thousands and thousands of books, but they're really good. Let me know what you think of the book. I think you'll love it.
I grabbed that one on Audible, you know, and just listen to that on the way to work, potentially.
No, that's good. See, I live less than a minute from my school, and so I can't really listen to podcasts. I can't listen to audiobooks. And that's not a problem. I mean, that's a good thing. It's nice. You know, there's days where I forget my lunch. I can run home and get it. There's days where I might spill something, or I might leave something at home, and I can rush home and get it. It's good because I'm actually vice principal now. The school where I'm vice principal is the school where I substituted and got the itch for teaching 20 years ago. So it's kind of come full circle.
Oh, very cool. John, if you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
I like that. I'd want to be a hip-hop artist. I want to be a rapper. I love rap. I love hip-hop. I'm going to take it a step further. I would love to be a freestyle rapper. That and be able to rap battle. That's probably one of the craziest answers you've ever heard, but I just think it is so unbelievable. I've seen, I'm going to throw out another video, a guy named Jason Silva. I don't know if you've heard of Jason Silva, but Jason Silva has these videos called Shots of Awe. And if you have not seen them, I'm telling you, as soon as you get off this interview, you've got to check them out. They're like 3 to 4 minutes. He's probably done 100 of them, and they're some of the most brilliant things I've ever seen in my life. He basically takes on all kinds of topics. The visuals are incredible. The man is like a modern day philosopher. But what was the original question? I went off on Jason Silva.
I wanted to know if you could be automatically good at something, what that would be.
See, I got going. Yes, and it's amazing because he talks about how hip-hop artists and other artists, when they get in their creative flow state, have the ability to shut off basically the filter part of their brain. And I think it'd be so cool to be able to just go up on stage and just, you know, rap battle, just hip hop, tear it up. You know, Lin-Manuel Miranda, the guy that I talked about earlier that wrote Hamilton and produced it and was in it, he is amazing at it. I mean, I like looking at some of the clips of him on YouTube. You go on YouTube and just watch him go on Jimmy Fallon or some other show, and they can just give him topics, and just within 2 seconds, he can come up with something just like that. It's just a lot of fun to watch. I think that'd be cool. I think that'd be cool. I don't know if my wife would support me on that. I think she would. She'd back me up. She'd be part of my crew.
She'd totally support you in that, John.
I think so.
So in terms of my own guilty admission here, like, sure, rapping would be cool. Freestyle rapping, even better. But you know what really gets me excited is sometimes I will watch hip-hop YouTube videos of this, like, one studio. I think it's in LA. I don't even remember the name. But they do these dances, and it just gets me so amped up. And I wouldn't say like I'm a bad dancer. I feel comfortable dancing, but I don't dance like that. You know what I mean? That's like choreographed and like all these sweet moves and people start screaming when you do this or do that.
Right.
That's what I want to be automatically good at.
Oh, I almost want to steal that. I like that because whenever I see those movies, I picture myself, you know, I'm like, that's me. And I can't do it at all. I can't even do it. I mean, dancing is actually, believe it or not, it's actually kind of one of my phobias. I don't dance when I go places. And yet I'll dance at school in front of kids.
In the halls.
I dance in the halls, but I dance like a little dance here, a little dance there. But like when I go places, I don't dance. So I got to work on that. So maybe that would be it. I might steal yours.
What message would you put on all school marquees if you could do that for one day across our nation?
Relax and enjoy the ride. I would say relax and enjoy the ride. Just relax because, you know, a lot of times we think whatever we're in the midst of is awful and it can be difficult. But then you look back and you think, you know, I mean, if I asked you right now, what were you really stressed about a year from today? You'd probably have a hard time thinking about it. And I do too. I mean, except for major problems, but a lot of times we spend our days worrying about things that, you know, a year from now, we're not really going to even remember what they were, and just enjoy the little things, enjoy the ride. I mean, you know, I enjoy the moments with my children and my wife and, you know, beautiful sunsets, or just trying to appreciate things. Like you talked about the morning routine. I mean, that's one of the things that the Benjamin Foley talked about. In other words, just try to think of something simple that you can really appreciate. In other words, like, just having the warmth of a blanket, being able to spend a night and sleep in a comfortable house. I mean, I don't take that for granted. I mean, life is good. I mean, I have a very good life and I am very fortunate. And so if I could put something up on a marquee, I would say just relax and enjoy the ride.
Well, John, you've made it. You've been a great guest. I expect nothing less from a podcast host of My Bad. John, you're building the school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school? And what would be your top three priorities?
My dream school. Here's how we're going to start the day: 30 minutes of intense physical exercise. I think that's important because, you know, nowadays, first of all, people don't get enough exercise. Teachers have to participate. Administrators, including myself, I got to participate. I got to jump in there. And one, I think it's going to get rid of some of the cortisol in our brains. Two, I think it's going to get rid of some of that energy. You know, our kids come to school and we expect them to sit down. And I think that's, you know, sit down all day. And I think that's impossible. So I think starting the day with 30 minutes of intense exercise. I think another thing is we need to find more time for kids to pursue their passions. So kids need to have at least an hour and a half a day. You know, people call it, you know, 20% time or genius hour, whatever we want to call it. That's going to be built into the day because, you know, I think we spend a lot of our day in elementary. I know people are learning, quote unquote, the basics, but I think we spend so much time trying to get kids to be decent at everything instead of really trying to identify what that kid's passion is, what that kid is strong in. Because, you know, when you get older and you have a career, you're not going to try to spend your life being average at everything. You make your living at, hopefully, if you're lucky, you get to make your living at what you're passionate about and what you really enjoy. And yet we spend all our days in schools trying to get kids to be halfway decent at everything. We focus on their weaknesses, you know, and it's okay. Kids need to be able to read and they need to be able to compute. But, you know, we're going to have an hour and a half of genius hour time. I think we're also going to have 30 minutes to an hour of sports in which kids learn how to play on a team. They learn how to cooperate and they learn how to work together because that is an absolute crucial skill in the workplace. It's also a lot of fun. I mean, some of my best memories were playing on sports teams, but I see kids nowadays and they don't know how to play on teams. They don't know how to play together. They don't know how to work together. And I think that's important. And I would teach them, and by the end, they would realize that playing on a team is a lot of fun. It's not always easy. You know, I try to tell kids, I deal with sometimes with kids that get in fights or get in scuffles from recess and they go out and play basketball and they get bumped or pushed and they think it's the end of the world. And I say, look, you're playing basketball. That's going to happen. You're going to be all right. So we're going to have exercise in the beginning. They're going to pursue their passions with Google Hour or, you know, an hour and a half. Going to have about an hour and a half of, well, I guess I better shorten this day. You said perfect day. Okay. An hour of sports. Going to have a healthy lunch. It's not going to be 30 minutes. I'm not going to have kids slamming their lunch down, barely digesting it. Because I think, you know, while 30 minutes might be enough time, by the time kids are seated and served or whatnot, they don't have 30 minutes to eat. They're going to have a 45 minute to 60 minute lunch. We're going to have a DJ in the cafeteria. And I'm copying this idea from my buddy Brad Gustafson. He has DJs at his lunch. I've read about him doing that and I've seen that. And that sounds so cool to have kids DJ the lunch. In other words, each day somebody gets to pick what kind of music is played. After all that, we are going to spend probably an hour to an hour and a half working on, you know, different fundamental skills. Obviously, kids need to know how to solve problems in mathematics. Kids need to learn how to read at a sufficient level. Kids need to learn that history can be a lot of fun. Kids need to learn about science. And you know, I'm not leaving out the STEMs, but I'm thinking there's going to be a lot of kids that are going to pursue that through the Google hour and a half. And so the three things, I'm going to make sure I stay on task here. My three things are physical exercise, mind. In other words, we're letting kids work on their strength, and empathy through playing sports. Kids need to learn how to empathize and sympathize and work together. So I don't know if it'd be empathy so much as just teamwork, because as you get older, you and I both know if you can't work with a team, you're not going to make it.
Right.
And it's going to be an incredible school.
I like the one that you've cast the vision for, John. And I want to thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
My parting words of advice would just be to listen to your podcast more, because, you know, I had so much fun talking to you. I felt like it was a conversation. It was laid back. You know, your podcast is different that I right away when I heard you, I'm thinking, this dude is pretty laid back. He's pretty chill. I like this. I like this. You know, I can learn something from this guy. And I would say listen to your podcast more. And listeners, Daniel didn't tell me to say this. He had no idea what I was going to say. But, you know, Daniel's laid back. I like that. I say way to get contact with me would be through Twitter or, you know, through Voxer. And give me 2 seconds. I have my phone in front of me, and I would never mind somebody Voxing me. My Voxer handle is jharpe, J-H-A-R-P-E, 3658. And if anybody wanted to talk about, you know, anything that I talked about today, or about blogging, or about making mistakes, or about anything, I would be glad to speak with people, because, you know, that's what I'm all about, trying to get people passionate about the things that I'm passionate about.
Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and John. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type John in the search bar. Show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. John, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thanks so much, Daniel. It was my honor. I had a good time.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you've found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge 10 bucks a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.